Morning, Patriots, and welcome to Storm Dispatch number one for the day. So as we talked about yesterday, one of the things we're going to be doing now every morning on this morning Storm Dispatch is we're going to be going through the Federalist Papers. And that's an important understanding of our Constitution in a big, big way. The Federalist Papers, which are also known as the Federalist, were a series of 85 essays written by Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison between October 1787 and May 1788. The essays were published anonymously under the pen name Publius in various New York State newspapers of the time. And it wasn't really until later that the authors were known. In fact, it wasn't until the publication by Jacob Gideon in 1818 that had corrections made by Madison, where the authors were revealed, because up until then, it was all anonymous. So Federalist Paper number one is the general introduction, and it was originally printed in the Independent Journal, and it was written by Alexander Hamilton. Now, as I stated yesterday, that these papers are written in an older American English and a little more, and a lot of legalese type language in there, not as heavy as we see today, but nonetheless. So we'll go through this. I'll probably stumble a couple of times because there's some words we don't commonly use, even though I've read this thing like 10 times this morning. But anyway, I think this is a good introduction and a good way for us to really start getting a deeper education on what our Constitution really means and what the intent was. Just a quick note before we jump in. We're here on Podbean for another 4 or 5 days while we sit in timeout from YouTube, because we said we were very bad. I was bad. I admit. I said that Joe Biden didn't legally win the presidency. So I got put in timeout. But nonetheless, and to keep people reminded, we are beginning the process to build out our own capabilities on our own standalone server. And that will include our own chat, our own live stream, audio live stream. And it will include some really neat other connecting hubs that are in there. It's an exciting project, and I don't know exactly when. I'm hoping we can have it up and running in about a month, but we'll see. But just be patient with all that. And in the meantime, we'll have to be subject to the nonsense that we put up with out here with big tech. And so before we get going, I guess one last thing is just to keep in mind that starting on Monday, it should be Monday because I talked to the web guy last night. And typically I do all my own web work, but we're so busy right now. I'm thankful that there's some amazing, amazing talent that have come to bear here. That I talked to him last night. He thinks he's going to have the new sign up and splash page for just as a kind of a place for everybody to go to and put their emails and do it the right way. So they all go into a database. We should have all that up and running here in a couple of days. So we'll let you know right here when it's all going. So patience as we work through this part of the storm and we keep pressing forward. Okay, so back to the Federalist Paper number one, and let's begin. To the people of the state of New York. Now, before I start, remember that these were published in New York, and this was a big part of the debate of ratifying the Constitution of the day. So this is kind of setting the stage for what this discussion is going to be. And obviously, the discussion in New York was at a critical swing point for the ratification of the entire Constitution. To the people of the state of New York, after an unequivocal experience in the inefficiency of the subsisting federal government, you are called upon to deliberate on a new constitution for the United States of America. The subject speaks to its own importance, comprehending in its consequence nothing less than the existence of the Union, the safety and welfare of the parts of which it is composed, the fate of an empire in many respects the most interesting in the world. It has been frequently remarked that it seems to have been reserved to the people of its country, of this country, by their conduct and example to decide the important question whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political establishing, for their political constitutions on accident and force. If there be any truth in the remark, the crisis in which we are arrived may with propriety be regarded as an era in which that decision is to be made, and a wrong election of the part we shall act may, in this view, deserve to be considered as the general misfortune of mankind. So I'm just going to stop here. This is an important paragraph in itself because it's establishing the major question. Can you have a country that's ruled by and for the people, and can they keep it? And I think that's the seminal question we face right now, and we all have to reflect very deeply upon that. And I'll continue. This idea will add the inducements of philanthropy to those of patriotism to heighten the solicitude which all considerate and good men must feel for the event. Happy will it be, for our choice should be directed by a judicious estimate of our true interests, unperplexed and unbiased by considerations not connected with the public good. But this is a thing more ardently to be wished than seriously be expected. The plan offered to our deliberations affects too many particular interests, innovates upon too many local institutions, not to involve it in the discussion of a variety of objects foreign to its merits and of views, passions, and prejudice little favorable to the discovery of truth. That's a lot of verbiage. Stop here a minute. That's a lot of verbiage to say that this whole plan needs to be discussed by the people, because in its end, it's a document by and for the people that will literally shape the destiny of the nation. Among the most formidable of the obstacles which the new Constitution will have to encounter may readily be distinguished by the obvious interest of a certain class of men in every state to resist all changes which may hazard the diminution of the power of men who will either hope to aggrandize themselves by the confusions of their country, or will flatter themselves with fairer prospects of elevation from the subdivision of the empire into several partial confederacies than form its union under one government. Again, to break from this, in other words, what he's saying is that the union is subject to the wills and greed of men, and that the strength of the union will depend upon the ability of people to stand above the temptations and to, quite frankly, stand in unity to bring a full and strong union as one group of people committed to a higher cause. We continue. It is not, however, my design to dwell upon observations of this nature. I am well aware that it would be disingenuous to resolve indiscriminately the opposition of any set of men merely because their situations might subject them to suspicion, into interested or ambitious views. Candor will oblige us to admit that even such men may be actuated by upright intentions, and it cannot be doubted that which of the opposition which has made its appearance and may hereafter make its appearance will spring from sources blameless, at least, if not respectable. The honest errors of minds lead astray by preconceived jealousies and fears. So numerous, indeed, and so powerful are the causes which serve to give a false bias to the judgment that we, upon many occasions, see wise and good men on the wrong as well as on the right side of the question of the first magnitude of society. This circumstance is duly attended to, would furnish a lesson of moderation to those who are ever so much persuaded by their being in the right in any controversy. And for a further reason of caution, this respect might be drawn from the reflection that we are not always sure that those who advocate the truth are influenced by purer principles than their antagonists. Ambition, avarice, personal animosity, party opposition, and many other motives not more laudable than these are apt to operate as well upon those who support as those who oppose the right side of a question. Were there not even the inducements to moderation, nothing could be more ill-judged than the intolerant spirit of a question. Intolerant spirit which has at all times characterized political parties. For in politics, as in religion, it is equally absurd to aim at marking proselytes by fire and sword. Heresies in either care can rarely be cured by persecution. This, Patriots, is a very important paragraph just to acknowledge that the inequities of man are what ultimately will make the difference or failure of success of the Republic. That the temptations of us that we face are always great. And what's really important about this paragraph is it shows the moral root in Christianity right here in the very beginning of this. This is a discussion right from the very beginning about the moral inequities or successes of man. And such an amazing time we start to realize the depth of the commitment of faith in our founding fathers. Something now that if you read, you wouldn't see anything like this in this sort of deep reflection of thought. So we continue. And yet, however just the sentiments will be allowed to be, we have already sufficient indications that it will happen in this as in all former cases of great national discussion. A torrent of angry and malignant passions will be let loose. To judge from the conduct of the opposite parties, we shall be led to conclude that they will mutually hope to invite the justness of their opinions and to increase the number of their converts by the loudness of their declamations and the bitterness of their invectives. Sorry, some of these words, it's like, oh my goodness, this is old. The enlightened zeal for the energy and efficiency of the government will be stigmatized as the offering of a temper fond of despotic power and hostile to the principles of liberty. An over-scrupulous jealousy of danger to the rights of the people, which is more commonly the fault of the head than the heart, will be represented as mere pretense and artifice, to the stale bait for popularity at the expense of the public good. It will be forgotten, on the one hand, that the jealousy is that usually come commitment of love, and that the noble enthusiasm of liberty is apt to be infected with the spirit of narrow and liberal distrust. On the other hand, it will be equally forgotten that the vigor of government is essential to the security of liberty, that in the contemplation of a sound and well-informed judgment, the interests can never be separated, and that a dangerous ambition more often lurks behind the spacious mask of zeal for the rights of the people than under the forbidden appearance of zeal for the firmness and efficacy of a government. History will teach us that the former has been found a much more certain road to the introduction of despotism than the latter, and that those men who have overturned the liberties of republics, the greatest number have begun their career by paying an obsequious court to the people, commencing demagogues and ending tyrants. As we looked at this paragraph, and what's important to grasp here is that it's right away we've identified, and they identified, we have identified the piece here of the passions of the heart versus the passions of the head. And why this is important is they've identified the debate that we're still dealing with today. This very paragraph in the very introduction of the Federalist Papers points out that there are people that are going to be torrent and angry, malignant passions will be let loose. And that it goes on to say that their voice will be louder than others to try to persuade people by volume, rather than by content and truth. It's an amazing passage that is set. It's where we sit today, the very issue that we're debating. So we'll move on. In the course of the preceding observations, I have had an eye, my fellow citizens, to putting you upon your guard against all attempts from whatever quarter to influence your decision in a matter of the utmost moment to your welfare by any impressions other than those which may result from the evidence of truth. You will, no doubt, at the same time have collected from the general scope of them that they proceed with a source not unfriendly to the new Constitution. Yes, my countrymen, I own to you that after having given it an attentive consideration, I am clearly of the opinion it is your interest to adopt it. I am convinced that this is the safest course for your liberty, your dignity, and your happiness. I affect not reserves which I do not feel. I will not amuse you with an appearance of deliberation when I have decided. I frankly acknowledge to you my convictions, and I will freely lay before you the reason on which they are founded. The consciousness of good intentions disdains ambiguity. I shall not, however, multiply professions on this head. My motives must remain in the depository of my own breast. My arguments will be open to all and may be judged by all. They shall at least be offered in the spirit which will not disgrace the cause of truth. That is such a noble passage, patriots, because it establishes his position that he is openly stating that he is for this, and at the same time offering his position openly so that there's transparency, and yet providing the discussion so that others can make a fair and equitable decision by themselves. This is incredible. And this shows a level of morality and values and ethics in our founding fathers that I don't think exists in our government today. I propose in a series of papers the discussion of the following interesting particulars: utility of the Union to your political prosperity, the insufficiency of the present Confederation to preserve that Union, the necessity of a government at least equally energetic with the one proposed to the attainment of the object, the conformity of the proposed Constitution to the true principles of the Republican government, its analogy to your own state constitution, and lastly, the additional security which its adaptation will afford to the preservation of the species of government, to liberty, and to property. In the progress of this discussion, I shall endeavor to give satisfactory answer to all objections which shall have made their appearance that may seem to have any claim on your attention. It may perhaps be thought superfluous to offer arguments to prove the utility of the Union, a point no doubt deeply ingrained in the hearts of the great body of the people to every state, and one which may be imagined as no adversaries. But the fact is that we already hear it whispered in the private circles of those who oppose the new Constitution that the 13 states are too great extent for any general system, that we must of necessity resort to separate confederacies of distinct proportions of the whole. This doctrine will, in all probability, be gradually propagated till it has votaries enough to countenance an open avowal of it. For nothing can be more evident to those who are able to take an enlarged view of the subject than the alternative of an adoption of the new Constitution or the dismemberment of the Union. It will therefore be of use to begin by examining the advantages of the Union, the certain evils, and the probable dangers to which every state will be exposed from its dissolution. This shall accordingly constitute the subject of the next address. And so ends Federalist Paper number one. And so some concluding thoughts. To keep in mind that at the very beginning, there was the coming together of the 13 colonies. But there was a great concern for having a single government oversee them all. And what is amazing about this in this whole initial passage is we have identified the very fight in which we are still in today. This is what's incredible about Federalist Paper number one, and then continues from here. This right here establishes that there's a concern for the Union, a concern for an overreaching government, that the colonies were already discussing the idea that they should have been sovereign, and that they were trying to developing a overarching constitution to bring those together and yet retain the sovereignty of the states while binding them in a general union. Those are key aspects in all of this. In this whole first Federalist Paper, we've identified the passions of debate, that there's going to be parties that literally speak loudly from the head and not speak boldly from the passions of the heart, that there's going to be attempts to persuade people, not by the substance of the argument, but by the persuasion of their voice and the loudness of their argument. Sounds familiar even today, doesn't it? And that ultimately it is up to a rule of men or women who take hold in the government that must establish themselves at a higher order, accountable to the people, and that begins right from the beginning, accountable to the people, not to themselves and not to their own greed or wants, and they must not be taken astray from the path of a more noble path. Ultimately, those are all Christian values, because in the very core of that, it's the idea of deception and being pulled away from God. And at the center of all of this is a strong, pure anchoring that there must be in God we trust. And it's not spoken in this, but it's established in this as the moral righting of the ship through all of this in order to keep the Union pure, to keep the Union unified, and leadership in this government on path to support the people and not their own personal greed. All of that embodied in Federalist Paper number one. What an amazing document. So Patriots, that ends today's show. Let's close with a prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time to bring us together and to continue to educate ourselves and expand our knowledge on the founding principles of this nation. What has become clear, Lord, as we continue this journey each day and each and every day, is that we have an obligation not only to know and become knowledgeable of the origins of this great country, the gift that you gave to us, but most importantly, to reestablish a moral line which centers on you, your love, and your truth in all that we do. We ask for your guidance, your clarity, eyes to see and ears to hear. May you guide us back to unity and victory of this great nation. And we say these things in Christ's holy name. Amen. So, Patriots, if you can bear with me as I stumble a bit through these documents, but we'll get through them, and hopefully my reading of the older texts will get better as we go. So, each morning at this time, we'll go through one Federalist Paper at a time, and we will explore what's in them and try to gain a better perspective on where our Founding Fathers were, their thinking that went into the Constitution to give us each a better range of understanding of where we need to go with this nation. it's kind of an exciting journey because we're literally going back to when they, before the Constitution was ratified, and we're going to experience over the next 80 plus shows, we're going to experience their thinking and the process, hopefully expand our understanding of what this great document was all about. So I wish you a very blessed day. I'll be back at 9:45 for political theology. Until then, head up, eyes forward, never bow to evil, never relent. Keep yourself anchored in truth, and above all, trust in God, for he will deliver. Have a blessed day, Patriots. Out for now.
In the night, we were wild, we were golden. Sparks and embers fly wherever we were going. Fire and ice, we built our lives on survival. Getting past the fault lines, we're riding your hand in mine. Freedom, the song we're humming. You can't stop the storm from coming. Why look, it all comes rushing. Wolves cry and lightning strikes. Dark sky and thunder rumbling. You can't stop the storm from coming. Holding on to what we built, absolution. East of Eden, running with the wolves to freedom. If you listen, hear the whispers with the night knows. There's a revolution rising in the shadows. Fire and ice we hold inside the revival. Guiding past the fault lines, we're running your hand in mine. Freedom, the song we're humming. You can't stop a storm from coming. Why look, it all comes rushing. Wolves cry and lightning strikes. Dark sky and thunder rumbling. You can't stop a storm from coming. I'll be your stronghold. I won't let go of you tonight into the unknown. We fight for all that we desire. I'll be your stronghold. Oh, when it's winter in your mind, into the unknown. Fire and ice, we can survive.
Thunder rumbling, you can't stop a storm from coming.